Chapter 10. It finishes. 99 weaves. She found the six-pointed star laid out in round river stones amid the towering dunes of a desert where the heat made her light-headed and sucked the moisture from her skin before sweat had time to form. She found it drawn in the snow on a mountainside where gale winds beat at her and lightning struck all around, and in a great city of impossible towers where people babbled at her incomprehensibly. She found it in a night-shrouded forest, in a black-water swamp, in a marsh of tall grass that cut like knives, on farms and plains, in hovels and palaces. Sometimes she found it while she was clothed, but her clothing frequently vanished, and just as often she had none to begin. Sometimes she was suddenly bound with ropes or manacles, bent into contorted positions that twisted her joints, or hanging suspended by her wrists or ankles. She faced poisonous serpents and toothed water lizards 3 spans long, rampaging wild boars and hunting lions, hungry leopards and stampeding herds of wild cattle. She was stung by hornets and ground wasps, bitten by swarms of ants and horseflies and insects she did not recognize. Mobs carrying torches tried to drag her away for burning, white cloaks to hang her, robbers to stab her, footpads to strangle her. And every time she forgot, and wondered how she'd gotten a slash across her cheek, what had to be a sword cut along her ribs, 3 gouges down her back that must have come from claws, other wounds and injuries and bruises that left her bleeding, limping. And she was weary. Oh, so weary, down to the bone. More than channeling even 99 weaves could explain. Perhaps her wounds did. 99 weaves. Clutching her plain woolen skirts, she hobbled to the six-pointed star, marked out in red tiles beside a burbling marble fountain in a small garden surrounded by a colonnade of thin, fluted columns. She could barely stand, and maintaining a smooth face took her to the limits of her ability. Pain throbbed in every part of her. No, agony was a better description than pain. But this was the last. Once it was done, this would be done as well, whatever this was, and she would be free to seek healing, if she could find an Aes Sedai. Otherwise a reader would do. This was another of the useless weaves, producing only a shower of shining, colorful flecks, if woven correctly. Incorrectly woven, it would redden her skin painfully, as from a bad sunburn. She began very carefully. Her father walked out of the colonnade right in front of her, in a long coat of a style at least a year out of fashion, with bars of the house Damodred colors marching from his high collar down to below his knees. He was very tall for a Kyrianan man, just 1 inch short of 6 feet, with hair more gray than not, worn in a club at the nape of his neck. He had always stood straight as a blade, except when bending to let her leap into his arms as a child. But now his shoulders were slumped. She could not understand why the sight of him made her suddenly teary.
"Warrain," he said, worry adding lines to his gentle face. "You must come with me immediately. It is your mother, child. She is dying. There is just time, if you come now."
It was too much. She wanted to weep. She wanted to rush off with him. She did neither. The weave seemed to complete itself in a sudden blur, and gaily glittering flecks fell around them. The display seemed especially bitter. She opened her mouth to ask where her mother was, and saw the second star behind him, worked in red tile above the colonnade, just where he had first appeared. A steady pace, without hesitation. "I love you, father," she said calmly. Light! How could she stay calm? But she must. "Please tell mother that I love her with all my heart." Brushing past him, she limped toward the second star. She thought he called after her, that he ran after and plucked at her sleeve, but her mind was a haze from the effort of keeping a smooth face and a steady tread. A stumble, really, but she neither hung back nor hurried. She stepped between the fluted columns beneath the star and found herself staggering into a round white chamber,
the reflected light of stand lamps dazzling her eyes. Memory crashed back into her, nearly buckling her knees. Unable to think as that torrent flooded in on her, she managed 3 more steps before stumbling to a halt. She remembered everything. The making of every weave, where every injury had been received. All of her missteps, her frantic efforts to hold on to some outward semblance of serenity. "It is done," Marian intoned, clapping her hands together with a loud crack. "Let no one ever speak of what has passed here. It is for us to share in silence with she who experienced it. It is done." Again she clapped her hands loudly, the blue fringe of her shawl swinging. "Moiraine Domodred, you will spend tonight in prayer and contemplation of the burdens you will take up on the morrow when you don the shawl of an Aes Sedai. It is done." For a third time she clapped her hands together. Gathering her skirts, the mistress of novices started for the doors, but the rest of the sisters came quickly to Moiraine. All except Elida, she realized. Shawl wrapped around her as though she felt the coolness. Elida was leaving with Marian. "Will you accept healing, child?" Anaya asked. A hand taller than Moiraine, her plain features nearly overwhelmed agelessness and made her look more a farmer than an Aes Sedai, despite her finely cut blue woolens with their intricate embroidery on the sleeves. "I don't know why I ask. You're not in as bad a state as some I've seen, but bad enough."
"I passed?" she said in amazement.
If blushes counted as breaking calm, no one would ever reach the shawl, Anaya replied, adjusting her own with a laugh.
Light? They had seen everything. Of course they would have to.
But she remembered a stunningly handsome man who had snatched her up and begun kissing her quite thoroughly just as she started the 43rd weave, and her face reddened. They had seen that.
"You really should heal the child before she falls over, Anaya," Varin said. Short and dreamy-eyed, she was quite plump in her fine russet wool and brown-fringed shawl. Moiraine liked Varin, yet she felt a chill at the sight of her clothing in the brown sister's hands.
"I suppose I should at that," Anaya said, and clasping Moiraine's head between her hands, she channeled.
These injuries were far worse than the welts and bruises Elida had given, and this time Moiraine felt as though she were caked in ice rather than dunked in cold water. When it passed, though, all of the cuts and gouges and gashes were gone. The weariness remained, seeming even heavier than before. And she was starving. How long had she been down here? Her carefully learned sense of time seemed utterly scrambled. One touch at her pouch told her the book was still there, but she could do no more in front of the sisters. Besides, she very much wanted to be clothed once more. But there was a question she wanted answered. Her tests had not been simply a matter of chance, completely a product of the Turangrial. The continual assaults on her modesty left no doubts. "The last test was very cruel," she said, pausing with her dress ready to lift over her head, pausing to watch their faces.
"It is not to be spoken of, however cruel," Anaya said firmly. "Not ever to anyone."
But Yuan, a slim yellow, half glanced toward the door, displeasure in her gray eyes. So, Marian had been no part of the test. Elida had tried to make her fail, and harder than anyone else, or the Arafelin sister would not have disapproved. So. The other 3 sisters went their own way, but Anaya and Varin escorted her back above ground, using a different route than she had come down by. When they left her, she went to the room where she and Swan had spent so many days copying names, and found 2 clerks doing the work, harassed-looking women who were none too pleased to be interrupted with questions about an accepted of whom they knew nothing.
Could it be? Oh, Light! Could it?
She hurried to the accepted's quarters, and was 3 times called down for it by sisters. She was still only accepted until tomorrow. She all but ran, and found Swan's room and her own both empty. Some of the name-taking excursions were ending earlier now, and it was well past midday, so she searched through the other rooms until she found Shiriam and Mirel sitting before the fire in Mirel's room, where the small rug had a ragged red fringe, and the washbasin and pitcher were blue.
"Marian came for Swan a little while ago," Mirel said excitedly, "for her test."
Did you pass?" Shiriam asked.
"Yes," she replied, and felt a touch of sadness at the sudden withdrawal in their faces. They even stood, hands going to skirts, almost making to curtsy. A gulf had opened between them. She was still accepted until tomorrow, but friendship was at an end, until they also gained the shawl. They did not ask her to leave, yet neither did they ask her to stay, and they seemed relieved when she said she wanted to go to her room to wait alone for Swan's return. Once in her room, she examined the book in her belt pouch, but nothing indicated that it had been touched, no pages creased by someone reading carelessly, which did not mean no one had read. But then, no one would have known what they were looking at unless they knew what Moiraine and Swan did, and Tamra's searchers. She offered a silent prayer of thanks that none of them had been among the sisters testing her, so far as she knew. A serving woman, or perhaps a novice, had laid a fire on the hearth and placed a tray on her small table, and removing the crisp white cloth that covered it revealed a larger meal than she thought she had ever eaten in her life. Piled slices of roasted beef, turnips with a cream sauce, broad beans with crumbly white goat cheese, cabbage with pine nuts. There was a round loaf of crusty brown bread and a huge pot of tea. The tray must only just have been left because everything was still warm. The tower had a way of timing things to a nicety. Much too much food, yet she ate every shred, even the bread, the whole loaf. Her whole body yearned for sleep, but that would never do. If Swan failed, and survived failing, light let her live at least, she would be brought back only long enough to gather her possessions and say her goodbyes. Moiraine refused to take the risk, so she curled up on her bed, but with a small leather-bound book. Hearts of Flame might be unsuitable for a novice, but it was one of her favorites, and Swan's. Now she stared at the first page for minutes before realizing she had not read a word. She got up to pace a while before taking up the book again, yawning, but she still could not manage to hold a sentence. Swan would come back. She would not be put out of the tower. But there were so many ways to misstep, so many ways to fail. No, Swan would pass. She had to. It would be unfair for Moiraine to reach the shawl and not Swan. She knew her friend would be a better Aes Sedai than she could ever manage. Throughout the afternoon, she heard the sounds of other accepted returning, some laughing, others complaining, all loudly. The noise always turned to stillness very quickly, though, as word spread that she had been tested and had passed, that she was in her room. Tomorrow she would be raised Aes Sedai, yet they behaved as though she already was, moving in a hush so as not to disturb her. The hour for supper came and passed. She actually thought she could eat a little something in spite of her huge and late dinner, but she did not go to the dining hall. For one thing, she doubted she could bear the stares of the others, or worse, their downcast gazes. For another, Swan might return while she was gone. She was on her bed, yawning and making yet another attempt at reading, when Swan walked in, her expression unreadable. "Did you—" Moiraine began, and could not finish. "It was as easy as falling off a boat," Swan answered, "into a school of silver pike. I almost swallowed my heart when I remembered this." She slapped her belt pouch, where she also carried her book of names. "But after that it went well." Her whole face suddenly turned bright red. She managed a smile through it. "We'll be raised together, Moiraine." Moiraine leaped to her feet, and laughing they danced hand in hand for joy. She ached to ask what had happened in Swan's test. That furious blush from Swan begged intriguing questions, but to be shared in silence and only then with the women who had shared it with you. How long since they too had failed to share everything? Even here the shawl brought separations. "You must be starved," Moiraine said, stopping the dance. She was so tired she had begun to stagger, and Swan was not much steadier. "And there must be a tray waiting in your room." She indicated the one on her table. It might have been brought up to her on this special occasion, but she was expected to carry the dirty dishes down herself, and feel lucky if she did not have to wash them for waiting so long. "I could eat an ore, but there's better than food in my room." Swan grinned suddenly. "I got 6 mice from one of the grooms this morning."
"We are practically sisters," Moiraine protested. "We cannot put mice in someone's bed. Anyway, beyond improper, it would not be fair. Nearly everyone has been out for most of the day, and they must be as tired as you are."
"Practically sisters isn't the same as being, Moiraine. Think. It's our last chance. It really won't be proper once we have the shawl."
Swan's grin faded to grimness.
"And Elida hasn't been out of the tower that I know. Mice are a small repayment for those beatings, Moiraine. We owe her. We owe her."
Moiraine drew breath. Without Elida, she might never have practiced trying to weave faster, and without that, she might well have failed. But she suspected her father had not been Elida's only special addition to her test. Too often her weaknesses had been laid bare by someone who knew them particularly well. The woman had tried to make her fail.
"Only after you have eaten," she said.